give me the go ahead when it's it looks like it's.
We'll give it a minute or so. We're already up to 28:34.
So Becky, I can't see the participants, so just tell me when to start.
I think we've leveled off, so I think it's go ahead and start.
All right, perfect. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the session, Real Talk Student Success, a Gateway to College Credits and Degree Completion. Before we get started, just some maintenance. All attendees have entered in on listen only mode, but we do want the session to be interactive, so please post questions using chat or Q&A, and we'll address them throughout. Also, there will be a recording of this presentation through the Amatic website after this. So for introductions, my name is John Lavaca, and I am the acquisitions editor for STEM Mathematics at Wiley. And today I'm going to be joined by Dr. Cynthia Young. Dr. Cynthia Young is the Dean of the College of Science and Professor of Mathematical Sciences at Clemson University, and is also the author of the Wiley series of College Algebra, Trigonometry, Algebra in Trigonometry, and Precalculus. She holds a BA in Secondary Mathematics Education from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, an MS in Mathematical Sciences from the University of Central Florida, and both an MS in Electrical Engineering and a PhD in Applied Mathematics from the University of Washington. She has taught high school in North Carolina and Florida, developmental mathematics at Shoreline Community College in Washington, and undergraduate and graduate students at the University of Central Florida. Prior to her leadership role at Clemson, Dr. Cynthia Young was a Pegasus Professor of Mathematics and the Vice Provost for Faculty Excellence and UCF Global at the University of Central Florida. You'll hear that a few times, UCF. Dr. Cynthia Young joined the faculty at UCF in 1997 as an assistant professor of mathematics, and her primary research area was the mathematical modeling of the atmospheric effects on propagating laser beams. Her atmospheric propagation research was recognized by the Office of Naval Research Young Investigator Award, and in 2007, she was selected as a fellow of the International Society of Optical Engineering. Her secondary area of research centers on improvement of student learning in mathematics. She has authored or co-authored over 60 books and articles and has served on the principal investigator or co-principal investigator on projects with more than $2.5 million of federal funding. Dr. Young was on the team at UCF that delivered the UCF Excel program, which was originally funded by the National Science Foundation to support the increase in the number of students graduating with a degree in STEM. The Excel learning community approach centered around core mathematics courses and has resulted in a significant increase of 40% in STEM graduation rates and has been institutionalized at UCF. Dr. Young, we are so happy to have you here today. So before I do turn it over to Cynthia, I wanted to just give you the five topics that we're going to be reviewing today. So let's get started. Cynthia, everyone here and everyone here attending, we're united in a goal of improving student success in mathematics. Tell me about your experience and the impact you've had on student success in mathematics, both locally at your institutions, UCF and Clemson, and nationally through your NSF projects and your series of books that are used around the world.
All right. Well, thanks, John. That was a long introduction, John. welcome to everybody. Good afternoon. Good morning, depending on where you're joining us from today. So glad to have everybody with us and taking the time to engage. As John said earlier, you know, I think the one thing we all unite around is, you know, this collective goal of improving student learning, which leads to improving student success in mathematics. And as we all know, mathematics is a foundation for success for so many things in so many fields of study. So, you know, John, when you say, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself, most people don't know. You said it a little bit earlier, but I actually started out as a high school math teacher and taught high school math. In fact, my first teaching job was convicted felons who were under the age of 18. And that I think helped make me a better math teacher today. And then as I progressed and fell in love with research and went for more advanced degrees, you know, I've taught community college. And then I ended up at the, as you said, the University of Central Florida. And I say all that because I really do think that teaching high school really helped me develop as a math teacher and instructor at the university level. Early on in my career, I was approached by Wiley and several other publishers. And at the time, RateMyProfessor.com was just starting out. And they knew that I was successful in students' eyes. And one of the things that I always struggled with when they said, you know, what are your favorite books and what are those kinds of things? And I said, you know, as faculty, we all hear students say, you know, I understand you in class, but when I get home, I'm lost. And I think everybody on this call can unite around our jobs to be as seamless as we can be. And so, you know, you say, what impact have I had? I think, you know, I wrote books based off really bridging that gap and making that seamless. By giving the teacher's voice and the instructor's voice more to the book. I think that's one piece. And then I gravitated towards, you know, these holistic university, community college type programs where we were focused on student success. You mentioned earlier, John, when I was at UCF, we were funded by the National Science Foundation we developed a program that was really cohort-based, but it made one assumption. And the assumption was success in mathematics is key to earning a STEM degree. And I know everybody on this call says, yes, we know. But we were able to demonstrate a 40% increase in retention rates. And the interesting thing there with this cohort model was that Hispanics and African Americans had the greatest gains over their white counterparts. And part of that is based off of the cohort model. So I think I've learned a lot from that. I have been at Clemson. We say go Tigers. You'll see I'm wearing orange today. At Clemson, I'm the dean of the College of Science. Mathematical and Statistical Sciences is at Clemson, is in one unit. And the team here, you know, a couple of years ago when I got here, we went around and visited other universities, Virginia Tech, UCF, NC State, and said, you know, looked at the scale-up model. We looked at the Emporium model. And we've implemented scale up here in several of our mathematics courses. And so I kind of say all that because I think, you know, I've been able to have pretty significant impact, but it's because I've been able to benchmark and learn from others and implement best practices. And so if there was any advice I would give folks here, it would be to, you know, look for those, benchmark against those places that are similar to you, find evidence-based you know, approaches and really try to implement that. I have failed a lot in a lot of ways. The Excel program, the first time we launched it in year one, we realized we made a big mistake and we assumed everyone would place into the same course. We know that they won't. And so my advice is look for best practices, try to implement them, and don't be afraid to fail. You know, just fail forward and learn from it.
So, Cynthia, you've been teaching mathematics since the 90s. What paradigm shifts in college mathematics have you seen in the past three decades?
Yeah, that's a good question, John. So I've been teaching since the 90s, but I've been in school since the 80s. And for those of you who were in my, I know many of you are younger than I am, but for those of you who are in my generation, you know, we remember professors, you know, I remember distinctly my linear algebra professor having six blackboards and they were going, you know, in every direction. We remember, you know, seeing the backs of our professors. We remember, you know, that professor who walked in and said, you know, look to the left, look to the right, only one of you is going to be here next year. We remember turning in work and getting it back a month later. You know, and a lot has changed. We've come a long, long way. I think one of the most fundamental paradigm shifts I've seen, John, is really the shift away from the focus being on the teacher to the focus being on the learner. You know, the teacher controls the pace, the teacher, it's all to the learner being in control of their own learning. And, you know, active-based learning, self-paced learning. So we've seen, I think, a deliberate shift. In fact, at Clemson, you know, a lot of research universities, we say research, teaching, and service. In our college, we say discovery, learning, and engagement. So the focus is on the learner, not the teacher. Another pretty big shift I've seen is just a mindset of our faculty from mathematics courses being, you know, we used to call them gatekeeper courses, and now we call them gateway or foundational courses. And so I think that really is just a mindset on, you know, we're not here to kind of hold the bar. We're here to make sure we get as many students to that bar as we can. And I think another thing that's changed, you know, there was no email when I was in college. That came later. You know, and so from Blue Books to later Scantrons, you know, to now we have course management systems, right? Where, you know, there's videos and students can control their learning. I think the biggest power, the biggest shift I've seen, especially in the course management, like the Wiley Plus course management systems like that, is I believe it really does change the dynamics of the classroom. So we talk about student to teacher ratios, right? So if you teach a class of 20, you say it's 20 to 1. Some of you may teach 300 students college algebra, and you may have a 300 to 1 student to teacher ratio. I think the technology and the course management systems actually turns it into a 1-to-1 ratio, you know, with mastery level, where you can set mastery level benchmarks. Students have to continue things until they're successful. So I think that's been a pretty powerful shift. And I think, and I'll talk a little bit about this in a little bit, but I think the other huge shift we've seen, and we've seen it over the last 30, 40 years, is that today, if you look at all the people who are earning bachelor's degrees today, over half of them started in a two-year college, in a community college. And we know that, you know, a four-year college degree is the most influential in social mobility. And so I think it's real important that we're focusing on, you know, two-year colleges, four-year universities, and the whole gamut. So those are the kind of the big paradigm shifts I've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we're seeing some data. This is from Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Workforce. They put out several reports each year, and this is the college payoff report. It's just the infographic you're seeing. Tell me a little bit about this data and what you're seeing here with that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's clear, right? So the a four-year degree is where you see kind of the red dashed, the horizontal line. And so that is your, this is median lifetime, these are lifetime earnings, right? So the goal is for us to get as many people to that four-year degree as we possibly can. And we know more than half of them now are starting at the associate's level.
So, all right. And then this data is from the Pell Institute for the Study of Opportunity in Higher Education. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so just to be clear, the purple at the top is if your family, so if we take everybody's income levels and we take the top quartile, you're purple, and that's the percent, we're looking at college degrees, right? Percent are in the top quartile. The navy blue is at the bottom is the bottom quartile. And you know, when I see this, I see a lot hasn't changed in 50 years. But the thing that troubles me about these data are, we know that ability, intellect, you know, those are uniformly distributed throughout our population, but opportunity is not. And these data tell me that, you know, much hasn't changed, but we have a long, long way to go to eliminate family income as a predictor of successfully earning a four-year degree. And I think that ought to be a national goal, is that we're eliminating family income as a predictor of earning a four-year degree, because that's how you're going to get that social mobility. The reason I bring that up with this group here today is that we know that two-year colleges are really key, and the foundation we're getting in our associate's degrees are key to students succeeding in earning a four-year degree.
So then this data here is from the National Center for Education Statistics. And again, can you just show us what this tells you and what you
see? Yeah, and so if you look at this, so the wealthier families are to the right and the poorer families are to the left. And where you start in that dark, dark, dark green is you start at a four-year university or college. And then the little bit lighter teal is an associate's degree. And so what that tells you is if the students who are predominantly from wealthier families are mostly starting in, you know, four-year universities, colleges, whereas students from our poorest families are starting in community colleges, two-year colleges. And so that's why, you know, we've really got to focus on the success of those students. And anything we can do to help students succeed, I think we need to be doing. And so I think this group is really key in that.
So so then what have you done to help strengthen success for students at two-year colleges and earning four-year degrees?
Mm-hmm. And so in fact, you know, improving student success for all students is important. Whether we're looking at demographics by urban, rural, gender, ethnicity, family income, whatever that is, I think knowing that over half of our students earning bachelor's degrees start in community college, we've really got to focus on kind of that alignment and that seamlessness, eliminating what we call the transfer disadvantage. You know, if you look at the data nationally, we track six-year graduation rates of students who start as freshmen at four-year universities, and then we track four-year graduation rates of those who transfer in. And you know, there's a significant gap. There's a significant gap. That gap also is related to Pell status, which is financial aid. And so one of the things I'm passionate about is eliminating that gap, eliminating the transfer gap. You know, students go to community college for so many reasons. Some are still working and need to stay local. Cost is a huge factor. Smaller classes, some would argue better instruction, especially at the gen ed level. And so for whatever reason, you know, more students are starting there. What we did at UCF, I don't know if you know, University of Central Florida is in Orlando, and big research, urban university, largest university, I think it's still the largest university in the country. We had several partners, and we formed this kind of direct connect relationship with our main feeder. The main feeder there was Valencia Community College. And one of the things I did early on at UCF was I started on these curriculum alignment teams. And what we would do in those days is we assumed that this is before really the onset of institutional research and having all this data at our fingertips. You know, we assumed that, you know, math was a gateway course and it had, you know, lots of prerequisites. So we would huddle all the faculty from the institutions, you know, share syllabi, share approaches, books, all those things, and really focused on making sure that these courses that have these foundations, that it was really seamless. It shouldn't matter if you took pre-calculus at one institution and Calc 1 at another institution, it should be seamless. And so that was a big focus for me there. Once I came to Clemson in my current role as Dean of Science, we have a partner here, Tri-County. You know, we're data-centric now. And so when they came to me as Dean and they said, we want to, you know, really focus on the courses that are causing students challenges. I said, well, don't guess what they are. Let's use the data and show us. And for the most part, it was mathematics, chemistry, physics, these sequential courses. And one of the things I'm currently working on with the president of the college next to us is this idea of literally swapping faculty. I think it goes a long way to get together and talk about syllabi and approaches and all of that. But I think you really don't learn the type, the student characteristics, the culture, unless you swap. So we're actually discussing having lecturers swap. We haven't done it yet. We're in the midst of talking about it. And what I would encourage everybody here today is, you know, if you're at a four-year university, who is your partner to your school? And if you're at a two-year school, who's your partner, you know, four-year university? And have those discussions. You know, it's usually great when it's chair to chair, but we all know that it's really the course coordinators that need to be talking. And, you know, anything you can do to facilitate those conversations is going to go a long way for really improving success, what I say, for all students. No matter where you start, it should not matter.
Okay, so so for the last 9 months, I know for many of us, it feels much longer. Faculty across the country have had to pivot quickly to the remote learning environment with their students. As the Dean of the College of Science at Clemson, what has been your experience?
Yeah, that's a question we never thought we'd be asking. So first, let me, you know, appreciate the COVID, the pandemic question. I just want to say before I even answer this question that to everybody who's on this Zoom with us today, you know, thank you so much for all you're doing. It's I've been just so inspired by our faculty have just been, you know, these words, we use them all the time, right? Nimbleness, resilience, innovation. We see it every day. And in addition to all those things, the bandwidth that we have, because, you know, trying to reach all these students all the time in an environment many of us are unfamiliar in, it's just been tremendous and it's been inspirational. So thank you so much for all you're doing for your students. At Clemson, you know, we've got a lot of faculty who've never, ever, ever taught online, who really don't know, have never used a course, not used Canvas yet or a course management system in the ways that we're using it now. And it was abrupt at first. And then our faculty said, okay, if we're going to do this, let's figure out how to do it. I think, you know, there's a couple things we've seen, right? The first is, you know, we're all comfortable with Zoom now. And I think this will carry with us in a lot of ways going forward, whether it's office hours for students who can't get to campus or whatever that is. I think Zoom's or whatever Zoom 2.0 turns out to be is gonna stay with us. One of the things that surprised us in a not good way, and I'm sure others are seeing it, is we have different versions of courses, right? So we have online courses, we have some face-to-face, and then we have some hybrid courses where, because of physical distancing, we're reducing capacity. So if there's normally 60 students in your class, you know, 20 come on Monday, a different 20 on Wednesday, a different 20 on Friday. And what we're finding is that the students, even though they have the option to come into class, many of them are choosing to stay, you know, home in their pajamas or dorms or wherever they are. And the other thing we're finding is that the faculty and the students will tell you this, they prefer either 100% online or 100% in person. It's that murky middle where I think the online learners and the faculty are kind of struggling on how do I teach this group and this group at the same time. And so we've actually made a deliberate change for spring to try to have more in-person classes and more online classes and fewer of the both. But I think, you know, course management systems have helped us tremendously. I can't imagine doing this without them. And some of the gold nuggets, even our chemistry faculty have shared this with me, and just our mathematics faculty, the ones who weren't used to using the course management systems, they would say, you know, this is kind of cool. I'm like, what does kind of cool mean? They said, well, you know, we know like in an hour which problems students struggle with, and we know, and so we can actually change our next, you know, class time accordingly. Or, remote proctoring on exams has been interesting to navigate that for students who, you know, are traveling and can't take a class in person, they don't really have to make it up. We now know we can use remote proctoring software. And, you know, students getting instantaneous feedback. So I would say that although, you know, the pandemic is, you know, what it's doing nationally, what it's doing within the learning space and higher education, it has given us, know, a few silver linings and gold nuggets, I think, in our toolbox as we move forward. And it's, you know, taught us to be nimble and resilient and innovative. And I think the other really cool thing I've seen, especially for faculty who weren't as comfortable in the virtual space, has been how great the students have been. I mean, the students have stepped up and said, look, I know how to do that. You want me to help? So it's just been, it's been interesting. But it, you know, you all are seeing the same thing I'm seeing. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But we hope we'll catapult through this and beyond this and get back to, everybody says get back to normal. I'm not sure what that is, but I do think there are some important pieces that are going to help accessibility, that are going to help student success, that we're going to carry, that we've learned and we've had to learn, that we're going to take with us post-COVID.
Next is harnessing the power of data. Can you give some examples of how you're harnessing the power of data, or how that is, what do you mean there?
Yeah. So, data scientists, I think, is the number one job out there at the moment, right? So there's just so much data. What are we doing with it? One of the things that we're doing in higher ed is we're harnessing the power of data to really improve student engagement and improve student learning. Perfect example is on Zoom, you know, the Zoom polls where you can, ask a question and get an answer. You know, in a traditional classroom, you ask a question and out of your 20 or 50 or 300 students, one person answers and you have one data point. Now you ask that question and you do it with a poll on Zoom and you have assessed your entire class in that second. So I think that's harnessing the power of data. The example I said earlier, you know, the faculty who say it's so cool to log into like Wiley Plus and they'll see, okay, they look for the red, right? Oh yeah, you brought it up, John, good. So, you know, green, the students, you know, most students did it. The, you know, yellow is they struggled, red, really struggling. They can look at all the problems they assigned and instantaneously just pick out the ones where the red, you know, seems to appear the most, and really then in real time emphasize, you know, areas to help strengthen those areas. So I think harnessing the power of data is huge on the course managing systems. I think the students getting real time feedback. My biggest pet peeve, you know, 30 years ago was a student would do 20 homework problems and they make a mistake and they propagate that mistake and reinforce that mistake throughout their homework 20 problems later. Now, you know, with like Wiley Plus, I do one wrong. I say, I figure out what I did wrong. And we're not, we're relearning. Okay, I've got it now. Now I can move on. So we're not reinforcing mistakes, I think, is another part of the power of data. I think the biggest thing is, so I'm a textbook author. And one of the things we do when we revise a book is we reach out to a bunch of faculty, like everybody on this call, and we say, you've been teaching out of this book. What are some areas, you know, where are areas we could get better? Where are the areas we're doing great? Where are the areas we could do better? And that's been invaluable to us. This year, this next edition, we did that. But I asked you this question. I said, John, let the students tell us where they're struggling. And so we dove into a national, you know, database of all the students who had used the book and all these problem sets like you're seeing here. And we were able to identify the top areas where, if you look nationally, students struggle the most. We're all on this call, we're mathematicians or statisticians. We appreciate data. And really it's just the power of, you know, power of data, really harnessing those data to improve student learning. I think it's just, you know, it's improving engagement. It's improving student learning.
All right. Gonna have to go. We have a couple of questions that came in during the chat. So I'm gonna just give you a couple of questions sent in. And if anyone else has more questions, please continue to post them to the Q&A or into the chat. One actually kind of goes back to something you touched on, but I just wanted to clarify. Due to the current situation, are math courses at your college primarily online, synchronous or asynchronous, hybrid or on campus? And if now primarily online or hybrid, do you see an impact on success rates?
Yeah, so we're yes to everything. And so at Clemson, we have multiple modalities. We have 100% online, synchronous and asynchronous. We have hybrid, but although we're minimizing that, where it's blended a little bit of both. And then we actually have traditional in-person classes. And what we're doing here is the large classes that are, so, you know, several thousand students are taking that course. We've moved some of those online and we're actually putting those in larger classrooms. We literally at Clemson, we have a huge basketball gym. That's where we're teaching our large courses so students can spread out. So from a modality standpoint, we're doing a little bit of everything. Student success data, I don't have the fall success data. I did pull spring success. You know, we pivoted a little bit in the spring from about spring break on. We did see differences. There was a Pell Grant disadvantage that we saw. And so one of the things we focused on here was to make sure that students weren't disadvantaged in orientation. So they had an array of courses, so not all 100% or an all in person, but a blended piece. But the students who in the what you would call foundation courses, so from pre-calculus through calc, differential equations, we saw a little bit in the spring, but summer was on par, and I don't have the fall data yet. So we didn't see much difference, but we didn't have a lot of enrollment in the summer. So the big answer will be this fall semester, which at Clemson, we're on semesters and we will end in about 3 weeks. We're moving 100% online after Thanksgiving. And so no matter what modality you are, we have to move 100% after Thanksgiving. Does that answer that question, John? Do I think
Yeah, I definitely would say that. I have another question that came in. We were asked, have you done any research on students attending college while incarcerated? Their reentry into the community and reduction. Oh my goodness, I do not know that word. I apologize.
So I'll say this word, sir. I have not done research on it. My first job was at the Orlando Marine Institute, which was in Orlando. And these were minors who were convicted felons, but they couldn't go to the public school system. I will tell you though that, and this is a data point of one, and so you know there's no statistical significance. The lens there was, for me, it was all on GED prep, trying to get students high school degrees. You know, we've been spending time now talking about college degrees. That was on high school degrees, and preparing them for workforce, development, things like that. But I've not done any research on it. Mm-hmm.
So I only have two questions left as of right now. The next question, which is a pretty big question, is you're asked, how do you think the role of technology has impacted mathematics? Which I know you touched on, but if you want to elaborate further.
Yeah, so from a standpoint of, clearly, you know, we have a Palmetto cluster here. So from a research and computational standpoint, clearly it is advanced. Mathematics, but from a student learning standpoint, I think it's impacting significantly. And I touched on this a little bit with the course management systems. The other thing that's interesting, we just launched a online data science analytics master's program at Clemson, and it's half mathematics statistics and it's half business management. What we're seeing is that, you know, more and more and more industries and positions are harnessing the power of data to make more strategic decisions in banking, in automotive, and all of these different sectors. And so where we're seeing a huge growth right now is in the data science realm. So harnessing the power of data to make better strategic decisions and getting decision-making leaders across all industries better kind of analytical and data science, just foundation understanding. So I think it is revolutionized. And the fact that data scientists is our number one job right now. If someone can define it, that'd be great. But I think the power of technology is huge. And from a learning standpoint, the other thing I would say is that. So I have a daughter who is in the sixth grade, the Gen Z type of a student who we call her a digital native. She grew up with her iPad and still to this day, knock on wood, does not have a phone yet. And I think they learn differently, right, than we did with books. And so one of the things I think technology has done is, you know, with apps and engaging now, whether it's video, whether it's just, customized learning paths, I think technology really has improved both the efficacy, you know, the engagement of the student, and the do I think I can do this kind of approach, to also giving the learners, the technology has allowed the learners to control more of the learning, whether it be the pace, whether it be the path. And so I think it's revolutionized it.
So do you have a couple more? So this one just came in. Has your university made a commitment to improve the achievement of students who come from low-income families?
Yeah, so that's the number one thing that when I came in to a four-year university from UCF, is a majority minority institution, urban institution, high Pell Grant. One of the data things we all look at is the difference, the success rate, freshman retention rate, six-year graduation rate of students on financial aid versus not. And there is a Pell gap. And we are always looking at reducing that. We're doing it in lots of ways. We're doing it with cohorts. We're doing it with cohort learning, as well as peer mentoring. We're doing it with students in living learning communities. But I don't think there's a silver bullet on that. I think there's multiple lenses and multiple things that we're doing to try to eliminate that family income as a predictor of success in college.
Okay, and I think we are at the last question, and I saved this one for last. It's a little bit of a softball. It's a sports question. So this is actually from Dan Bueller. I've met Dan before. So simple question, who would win on a neutral site, UCF or Clemson football?
Hi, Dan. I would say on a neutral site right now, I would have to pick Clemson. But I think UCF would give us one of our strongest games we've played yet.
Great.
Go Tigers.
I knew that was going to be a tough question. It's like, I love UCF too.
But I do too. UCF's been great, and it's been fun to watch UCF grow to where they've been able to elevate to in terms of national prominence in their athletics.
All right. Well, I think we've hit the end of our questions. Looks like we're going to wrap up about 5 or 6 minutes early. But please definitely check your apps for the next sessions to be taking part in the Wiley Scavenger Hunt. And Cynthia, thank you so much for joining us today. If you have any questions, please reach out to Wiley or to Cynthia. Thank you for attending today.
Thank you, everybody. Stay safe, stay well. Happy Thanksgiving.